Sportsnet 960 The Fan is CFAC 960 AM Calgary, a Rogers Sports and Media radio station. All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
More NHL rumor conversation coming up at the bottom of the hour, including the Winnipeg situation, which we haven't talked a lot about. Just talked about it in the previous segment, the end of hour number two with Rod Peterson. Of course, Barry Trotz awaiting his decision, but does it make sense for Barry Trotz? Is there more under the surface with the Winnipeg Jets? We'll talk about all that and more later on in hour number three. Welcome back to the program. Don't forget you can find The Big Show wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon. Subscribe now. Never miss a moment or a guest. My name is Will Nault, and right now we get the latest in the sports world. All the headlines from this Thursday, June 23. We say hello and good afternoon to Logan Gordon. Logo, are we starting?
Well, Will, it's an off day in the Stanley Cup playoffs, an off day for the Toronto Blue Jays, but we'll start with some NHL news and what could be some big news out of Ottawa. The Senators have signed a memorandum of understanding with the National Capital Commission and other investors to build a downtown arena at LeBreton Flats. Several steps remain before finalizing this deal, including working on a lease deal for the land by January. The Senators were given preferred bidder status to build an arena at LeBreton Flats back in 2016, but the agreement fell apart as negotiations between their late owner, Eugene Melnick, and his business partner, John Ruddy, soured, resulting in ongoing lawsuits. But now securing a new bid for an arena was believed to be one of Melnick's final acts before he passed away in March. The Senators' current arena, Will, the Canadian Tire Center, located in Kanata, is approximately 25 minutes from the downtown core of Ottawa. This could go a long way to fixing one of the arena situations that the NHL probably would like to have back when it comes to the team in this nation's capital.
It's huge, and you look at some of the young talent on that roster. I think a lot of people, and you might not believe it listening, but there are many that believe this team is very much on an upswing and is ready to at least compete for a playoff spot the next couple of seasons, maybe as early as next year. You never really know, and certainly don't know what the offseason holds. But, you know, a brand-new young captain, Thomas Chabot on the back end. Of course, Tim Stutzel as well up front. There's a lot of excitement around this Sens team, and I think very much, you know, similar to the Arizona conversation, a downtown arena and a new location I think would do wonders for the Senators and their fans. I've never been out to that area, nor do I know or experience what the drive is like on a Tuesday evening to Kanata from downtown Ottawa, but from all understanding, it isn't the most fun, and it relates into a lot of people just saying, you know what, we're going to stay home and watch the game on TV. I think this is a massive move for the Senators. By no means is it a guarantee. There's no shovels in the ground. There's still a long ways to go, but Logan, a significant development in Ottawa's situation, and if this does go forward, I think it's going to be awesome for that Sens team and maybe a lot of those players playing in a brand new arena a handful of years down the road.
Let's move to baseball. Mentioned an off day for the Toronto Blue Jays after winning their last game against the Chicago White Sox. They are traveling to Milwaukee, getting set to start a series against the Brewers tomorrow, but plenty of action this afternoon across the majors, Will. Let's start in Minnesota. The Guardians taking on the Twins. This one, a pitching battle, except for the bottom of the third inning, where we would find our only run of the ballgame.
Got to square early and understand that you don't have to run away. You just have to put the ball in play.
Deep to center. Straw going back. Who needs to bunt? Gordon's just hit his second home run to straightaway center field. And the Twins take a 1-0 lead.
Yes, Nick Gordon, my cousin, his second home run of the season. It's a solo shot in the bottom of the third inning. That's your only score of this game, Will. A 1-0 Twins win over the Guardians. I mentioned the pitching battle between Zach Plesac and Devin Smeltzer. Both of them go six innings strong. Both of them only giving up three hits in the ball game. But, of course, Plesac nailed for that one solo shot, and it's the difference in this game between the Twins and the Guardians. Not many major league games going down with a 1-0 score.
No, and obviously I think for those two pitchers, it's an awesome day for both of them. And, yeah, to see a 1-0 score, there are some, you know, maybe some old-school fans that love pitching in defense still, so they would have certainly nerded out for this game. But, yeah, you don't see that very often in today's big leagues, and certainly pretty cool to see a little bit of a throwback of sorts here today with those two pitchers. And it makes me mad because I looked at both of those guys for streaming in fantasy today and decided to ultimately not pick up either, but it appears would have been a good decision to pick up either Plesac or Smeltzer.
Speaking of strong pitching performances...
Who doesn't like to say Smeltzer?
Smeltzer. Speaking of strong pitching performances, we got another one from Clayton Kershaw today, as this won't surprise anybody, but the 43-25 Dodgers had no trouble dismantling the 23-46 Cincinnati Reds this afternoon.
Turner at second, one away. He lifts the ball to right center field. That sends Senzel back. He'll admire this one. Wow! What a drive by Freddie Freeman! A long two-run home run, and it's 3-0. Majestic blast from Freeman. Back-to-back games with an impressive home run.
That one was in the third inning. Cody Bellinger would top it off with another two-run shot in the fourth to give the Dodgers a 5-0 lead. Clayton Kershaw was dazzling. The bullpen let in a couple runs to make this one look closer than the 10-5 final will. But here's Kershaw's line on the day. Six innings pitched, seven hits, just one earned run and one walk. Hunter Green takes the loss for Cincy. Five innings pitched, nine hits, six runs, all six of them earned. It's been a long year, and it's going to continue to be a long one for the Reds.
I mean, boy, the Reds had a little bit of a bump there, it felt like, when Joey Votto first came back. But, yeah, it's a long season for them and for the Dodgers, and more importantly for Clayton Kershaw, still getting it done. And you like to see that. Kershaw, I think, had some questions. Obviously, he's battled a lot of injuries, but he's come back. He's had a very good season. And, of course, the Dodgers with their payroll, they're always there come October, and wouldn't expect anything different this October.
Take you to Pittsburgh. It's a lowly battle in the NL Central this afternoon. The 26-44 Cubs in Pittsburgh to take on the 29-40 Pittsburgh Pirates. But it was a notable day in what might not be a notable season for both of these teams for Michael Chavis of the Pirates.
Castillo. Crack towards center field. Deep. Chavis has tied the game. Lord, help us and save us, cries Mr. Michael Chavis. And it's tied up. Number seven.
I also just wanted to play that call because it was so awesome. Yes, Michael Chavis. The Pirates looked like they were going to blow this one, Will. They give up five in the top of the eighth inning and are up one until Michael Chavis hits that solo home run. We would go to extras where Chavis would single to right field. It would bring home Ke'Bryan Hayes in the 10th inning. They're able to lock it down with Chris Stratton coming in to save the game for the Pirates in the bottom of the 10th. And when you're having a bad year, Will, like both of these teams are, it's kind of those little moments that make you happy and you kind of cling on to, and that might be one for Chavis and the Pirates in this lowly season.
Just play the clip again because it's so good.
Back towards center field. Deep. Chavis has tied the game. Lord, help us and save us, cries Mr. Michael Chavis.
You could have said just cries Chavis and it would have been great, but phenomenal call. And I appreciate that you have brought that into our world today, Logan. Thank you.
Yeah, I really wouldn't have a reason to talk about the Cubs and the Pirates on a Thursday
afternoon.
Do you
notice how I'm avoiding talking about it just by talking about the clip?
There's nothing else really to talk about. There's still three games in the majors still to go tonight. One game underway. It's the A's and the Mariners, bottom six. A's with a 1-0 lead there. Orioles, White Sox at 6-10. 5:05 Astros Yankees, 7:40 tonight, the Phillies in San Diego getting set to take on the Padres. CFL Week 3 action kicks off tonight, Will, from Percival Molson Stadium in Montreal. The Alouettes will play their first home game of the 2022 season as they're set to host the Saskatchewan Roughriders. It'll also be the third consecutive Thursday night game for Montreal to start the year. Despite their 0-2 record, they've been in both games they've played this season. They lost their season opener 30-27 to Calgary before suffering a heartbreaking 20-19 loss to the Toronto Argonauts in Week 2. Trevor Harris gets the start for the Alouettes in this one as Vernon Adams Jr. is out due to COVID. For the Rough Riders, a much better start to their season, Will. They are 2-0 after a Week 2 win over Edmonton. Shaq Evans was Cody Fajardo's main target. He caught 5 of 8 targets for 81 yards, while Mitchell Pickton and Keenan Schaefer Baker also dialing in on that win for the Riders, who are expected to have Duke Williams back in their lineup. Add to that Jamal Morrow, their star running back, rushing for 126 yards and a touchdown against the Elks after managing just 14 yards in Week 1. We'll see if the Alouettes can get on the winning track this week after a tough one against the Argos in Week 2.
Well, no question, the big story of this game has to be the Riders' front seven against Trevor Harris. Of course, Harris getting the start in place of Vernon Adams Jr., who had the short hook in Week number 2 and now is going to miss Week 3 with a COVID illness. Trevor Harris, can he get the job done? You mentioned it earlier on in the program, Logan. You know, if he does have a great start, it could very well lead to it being his job going forward, but not an easy task against a Riders defense who right now has been, you know, eating every quarterback for lunch that it's faced. 13 sacks in 2 games. We'll see what tonight brings between these two teams, but that's going to be one of the biggest stories. How many sacks against Trevor Harris and the Owls, and can Harris maybe use the quick throws to, maybe counter that Saskatchewan pass rush? It should be a fun one to watch.
And, of course, the news here in Calgary today, Will, Bo Levi Mitchell limited at practice. He didn't take any reps with the first team today. He is, as the injury report has just come out moments ago, dealing with a right foot injury as listed by the Stampeders. He is officially questionable for their game Saturday against the Edmonton Elks. Same questionable status for punter Cody Grace and Eli Buka. Trey Roberson, who was banged up in that game against Hamilton, didn't practice this week. He is officially listed as doubtful. So the Stampeders could be down a couple of key players in that matchup against Edmonton.
Yeah, and I think it'll be very key to see what Bo Levi Mitchell does tomorrow during walkthrough ahead of that game on Saturday. Of course, Trey Roberson, I don't think we're surprised that he's listed as doubtful. But yeah, certainly the big question for the Stampeders is the status of Bo Levi Mitchell. Of course, if he can't go, the start will belong to Jake Mayer. But tomorrow at walkthrough, maybe how his foot responds and where things are at. And I would suggest this goes back, Logan, to Week 1 when he got that foot all twisted up in an awkward play that resulted in him being in a walking boot immediately after the first game of the season. So certainly something to watch. I would say it's not nothing, but it's not necessarily major news just as of yet. We'll wait and see what happens tomorrow at walkthrough.
The first major event of the NBA offseason is tonight. It's the NBA draft, where the Orlando Magic are expected to take Auburn forward Jabari Smith with the first pick, according to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski. Oklahoma City Thunder holding the second overall pick, while the Houston Rockets currently sit with the third selection. The Magic hold the first pick in the draft for the fourth time in team history. Back in 1992, they used their first ever top pick to select the one and only Shaquille O'Neal. The following year, they selected Chris Webber first overall before trading him to the Golden State Warriors for Penny Hardaway. That duo led the Magic to the NBA Finals in 1995. And then in 2004, Will, they selected Dwight Howard first overall. So a pretty good record for Orlando at that number one overall selection. I'm sure they would love to have similar success with tonight's pick.
Yeah, those are two pretty good players. I know that there's certainly lots of opinions on Dwight Howard. I think Shaq's career speaks for itself. Hey, you'd like to have the same success. Anytime you get that first overall pick, pardon the pun, but you'd like that pick to be a slam dunk. And We'll see if that's the case for the Orlando Magic tonight.
And we've talked about this so many times. The NBA offseason
is going
to
be
unlike
wild.
Anything, and it seems to be unfolding mostly in Brooklyn over the last 24 hours. ESPN Insider, of course, Adrian Wojnarowski, all over this one. The LA Lakers have emerged as the most significant threat to land Kyrie Irving if he elects to leave the Brooklyn Nets this summer. He holds a $36.5 million player option, but can decline it to become a UFA this offseason. He's reportedly undecided on his future, and of course, a return to or a landing spot in LA would reunite him with longtime teammate in Cleveland, LeBron James. And now, as that news comes out, Shams of The Athletic reporting that that doesn't sit well with Kevin Durant, who is now considering his options going forward if Kyrie Irving doesn't return next season. It's just a possible trade destinations listed from Wojnarowski. Durant's also on the Lakers list, Clippers, Knicks, Heat, Mavericks, and 76ers. The Lakers leading this push to get Irving might also bring Kevin Durant out of Brooklyn as well. We always talk the NBA offseason is like nothing else will, and it could start with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant.
Absolutely stunned. It's starting with those two players who it feels like drama follows them everywhere.
Well, they're very very loyal to one team, yes. Right? They've only played in one
right
place.
Mm-hmm.
They've never switched teams,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Why would they ever go anywhere else?
Mm.
No?
I think Kevin Durant on the Lakers with LeBron James would be something else, tell you that much.
Kyrie and LeBron reuniting in L.A. would be something, too, if that's where he wants to go.
Put them both there. It's fine.
Put them all there?
It's all good.
It's all there. Salary cap's a joke.
That's right. Or it's fake, as they say in the NFL.
Yeah. So that's the latest on the NBA. Of course, if anything happens, we'll bring it to you here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. A couple more notes to end off headlines today. Potentially the next great Manning quarterback, Will. Five-star quarterback Arch Manning has announced his plans to commit to Texas University. He is, of course, the nephew of Peyton and Eli. He is the nation's top prospect in 2023. He would eventually choose Texas over finalists Georgia and Alabama. That, of course, commitment keeps his family tied to the SEC, where Peyton spent his entire college career at Tennessee before entering the NFL as the first overall pick in 1998. Eli would play at Ole Miss en route to going number one in the 2004 draft. Arch is the grandson of Archie Manning and the son of Cooper Manning, who both also went to Ole Miss. Texas set to leave the Big 12 for the SEC in 2025. Arch Manning at Isidore Newman School in New Orleans tossed 72 touchdowns to 18 interceptions in 27 games over the last three seasons.
Pretty talented kid. I think everybody is suggesting that maybe, and including his grandfather, suggesting that he is ahead of where Peyton and Eli were at this age, and that's pretty scary to think
about. Well, they weren't any good at football.
You know, of course, I think we'll wait and see what happens. Certainly, if I was to predict the future, Logan, this will be a number one overall pick in the NFL. And, you know, for a team like Texas to land Arch Manning, I think is a massive get for them. Big day for the Texas Longhorns. And now the watch is on, I think, for them in terms of whether or not they join the SEC. I think that is the next watch for the Texas Longhorns, but massive. And, of course, Steve Sarkisian is there. And we all know about the pro-type offense he runs. Did it, of course, at Alabama. And now at Texas, so you can understand why Arch has maybe picked the Texas Longhorns. But yeah, this is it's a big day for the Longhorn family. It's a massive, massive get for them.
And last note on headlines today: it won't be official anytime soon, Will, as they're dealing with a number of salary cap issues through the off season. But our NHL insider from DailyFaceoff.com, Frank Saravelli, reporting earlier today that there's a verbal agreement between the Vegas Golden Knights and forward Riley Smith for him to return on a three-year deal around $5 million per season, right around what he was at the last couple of years in Las Vegas. They've already traded away forward Evgeny Dodonov to the Montreal Canadiens earlier on this offseason. But both sides aware that they might have to wait a bit for this to fit under the salary cap structure during the offseason. So sounds as though Riley Smith has made his commitment and decision to return to Las Vegas. We just might not get it official until Vegas sorts out some of their cap issues.
We'll talk about this a little more here in hour three, but I just want to say shout out to the Vegas Golden Knights for finally showing a bit of loyalty. It's nice to see. You know, Riley Smith's name been involved in the trade conversations for what feels like forever. So nice to see them show a little bit of loyalty. I have no idea how they're going to make it work under the cap, but hey, congratulations to them. And nice to see a little bit of loyalty from the Vegas Golden Knights towards, I believe, this is kind of the first loyalty, you know, connection or relationship between them and one of their OGs. This is an original Vegas Golden Knight, which we don't see a lot of them anymore. They've all been shipped out of town.
Yeah, he's been there for five seasons already, and you're right. There's not many of those guys left from that expansion draft.
Him and Marchessault, I believe.
Yeah, he was man. Remember when Florida
both those guys
the bet on letting both of those guys go? I mean, hey, they've turned into a good team 5 years later, but you let those guys walk to Vegas? Who did they protect in that? Who is it they didn't want Vegas to take? I can't remember now. Anyways, I'll have to look back and see, but it was somebody like that they didn't want Vegas taking somebody. They left somebody exposed, and they wound up taking Riley Smith and getting Jonathan Marchessault for it, and I believe it was an ugly situation. That's why Seattle didn't get anybody in their draft, because nobody wanted to pull a Florida in round two of the expansion drafts. Not great.
Nope, but hey, it's first sign of loyalty from Vegas, and it's Petrovic to the text line's point. That's who they were trying to protect.
Yeah.
How'd that work out? Where's Petrovic now?
Wasn't he like seven on the Flames 1 year?
No, he was on the Edmonton Oilers, I believe is the team you're looking for. He was never a Calgary Flame, I don't think.
Maybe not.
He was in Edmonton.
Oh, no, he was in Stockton. He was here.
It wasn't here. It was in Stockton.
Well, I think he was in Calgary when they were.
He was in Stockton.
Locally. Yeah, but he was with he was in Calgary.
He was in Edmonton, though, was he not?
He was.
There, that's exactly.
For nine games.
That's right. Anyways.
Good thing they saved him, though.
Worked out for Florida. They won the President's Trophy. I don't think they're too upset about
it. No, but it still doesn't look good.
No, it does not. And, you know, maybe some lessons learned. Seattle Kraken, not with as strong a team. But it feels like maybe Ron Francis didn't hold teams hostage, much like George McPhee did in Vegas in 2017. That'll do it for headlines on this Thursday. Thanks for that. There's the update on all things in the world of sports. He's Logan. I'm Will. Big show rolls on. Hour number three, live from the Sportsnet 960 downtown studio. Going to rehash this from earlier. More of your thoughts at 960-960. We're 2 weeks away, exactly today. July 7th is the opening round of the 2022 NHL Draft from Montreal. Where are you at on the Flames and Johnny Gaudreau? Of course, we'll have lots of time to talk about this in the next 2 weeks. We get closer and closer to the draft, but 2 weeks out, we're starting to get nervous. Where are we at with Gaudreau and the Calgary Flames? No news there, and certainly feels like if Gaudreau was going to sign with the Flames, he probably would have already signed that deal, knowing the offer and the pitch has been made. Where are you at? 960-960. We'll continue hour three next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Welcome back to the big show, hour three. Final segment of the program coming your way on this Thursday afternoon. From the Sportsnet 960 downtown studios, it is Logan Gordon. It is Will Nault. It is our producer, the one and only Aaron Howell. Lou and Howell.
He's our good pal.
He's a good pal, that's for sure. Right, Aaron? You're a good pal of ours?
Great pal.
Great pal. No one understands what that means but us. That's fine. Peter Labardius in hour one of the program today. Hour two was a bit of a CFL power hour, but we hit on some different topics with Rod Peterson, the Rod Peterson Show. Justin Dunk from Three Down Nation. CFL Week kicks off tonight at 5:30. Montreal hosting the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Make sure to catch all of your favorite segments on the podcast. They are posted moments after the hour finishes. Sportsnet.ca, wherever you get your podcasts. Apple, Google, Amazon, Spotify. Make sure you like and subscribe. Talked a bit about Johnny Gaudreau as well in hour one, Will. 2 weeks out from the NHL draft. Feels as though we're getting closer to a decision one way or the other, or needing to know a decision one way or the other. Because as we've talked about a lot, kind of hard for this Calgary Flames team to do anything until you know what number 13 is going to do. Maybe it has a massive impact on what happens with Matthew Tkachuk and how those conversations go with him being an RFA. We've talked about Mangiapane. We've talked about Oliver Shillington. We haven't really talked about too many of the UFAs outside of Gaudreau because, again, what are your plans look like if you don't have 13, if you do have 13? Does the draft suddenly become a much more important place for Brad Treliving and the Calgary Flames? All of these have to be answered before July 13th at the latest. I would say the draft, you'd want to know for sure one way or the other what Johnny's planning to do. And like we've said, even if it's just, hey, I'm going to test the market, I'm not closing the door on coming back to Calgary, but I have to go out and look. You know, if you're Brad Treliving and company, I think once that decision's been made, you have to start. Not only, I'm sure they've started on plan B, Will, but I think you have to start acting on plan B. Because you cannot wait and have your entire offseason decided before you get a decision from Johnny Gaudreau.
Well, and I think even, you know, you mentioned July 13th. That's, of course, the opening of free agency. I would argue the Flames want an answer by the draft, as you've mentioned. And I also think that if you get to the draft and maybe you haven't had an official answer from Gaudreau, but if you get to the draft, Logan, and you haven't had anything signed, you can pretty much kiss it goodbye. I would suggest that 6 days before free agency opens and he's not signed a deal, it's pretty much over for me. I don't know if you feel the same way, but that's kind of where I'm at. As the days go on here with each passing day and no Gaudreau and Flames contract signed, the less and less likely you feel that it's going to happen, or certainly the less confidence you have in the fact that it's going to happen. Like for me, I'm already at the situation and 2 weeks out from the draft where you kind of feel like it's inevitable that he's going to test the market. I just, at this point, it's been very clear that the pitch has been made. You know, this is a situation where I think both sides have a very clear understanding. You know, maybe Johnny has mentioned to them what it might take to sign him. I would suggest that right now, because the season's been over for what feels like over a month, I think he pretty much knows where the Flames are and what that offer has looked like. That pitch and that offer has been made. There might have been a couple counters back and forth, but there's been conversations ongoing because from all NHL insiders, as soon as Calgary's season was over, they were putting on the full court press. So the fact that he's not signed, the season's been over for as long as it has, kind of tells you that he's prepared to test the market. That's how I feel. You listening might disagree. You, Logan, might disagree, but it's been that long already. It feels to me like a guy who's testing the market and probably is a guy who is not coming back to Calgary.
Yeah, I won't close the door on coming back to Calgary. I think that at this point, and as you know, a couple of people have said and some people have texted in at 960-960, the fan feedback line, I'm not stuck on the eighth year being the deciding factor in all of this. I still think that Johnny Gaudreau could sign in Calgary on a 7-year term after looking at what's out there in free agency. I still think that's for me, that's the most viable option. I don't think he's signing an 8-year deal before July 13th at this point. Based simply on the fact that you're 3 weeks out from free agency, you've never been an NHL free agent, you haven't had the chance to see what's out there ever in your NHL career.
Right.
Why at this point would you not at least open that door? The only option, the only reason you wouldn't is because of the 8th year. And I don't think that's the biggest sticking point in all of this.
No, I don't either. I think it allows
winning
you
and family and all of that.
I think it allows you to offer more money. Certainly puts you in a position where you make it tougher for other teams to equal total money. And if that's what's most important to Johnny, that is where the 8th year, I think, does play a massive role. But
it might be
right.
A bigger deal for the Flames than it is for Johnny.
Sure. But I don't disagree. I think that, and I've said this numerous, I said this earlier on the show, and I'll say it again. I think for Johnny, you sign a 7-year deal. I don't think his NHL career is over after the 7 years. Like, no. I think he's a guy who can sign another 2-year deal after that, a 1-year deal after that. So, yeah, I'm with you. I don't think that it is make or break. And I still think that if all things, and knock on wood, that he stays healthy after 7 years, yeah, maybe he's not going to get a contract that's of equal of value. Like, for example, if he signs an AAV of 10 on this deal, yeah, maybe that extra 1-year contract at age 35 and 36 isn't going to be worth 10, but I still think he's a guy that, you know, production's not going to fall off to a point where he's a $1 million player at that age.
No, I don't either.
So I don't think it's a huge deal either. I just think it allows Calgary to perhaps be more equal in other offers because you've got that 8th year to use to your advantage. But do I think it's make or break? No. And do I think that, you know, he's a guy that can still circle back and sign with Calgary even after he tests the market? Sure. I 100% believe that.
Well, and it's interesting because we say that, but we don't know exactly what the market is outside of Calgary. Right? We talk about, you know, the competitive advantage to that 8th year and how much they can afford to be ahead, right? So I think the AAV was somewhere around, if someone wanted to match 10 on the extra year, it was their AAV wound up coming in at 7 years, somewhere around $11.4 million or something like that. But we don't know if that's out there for Johnny, and neither does he, right? I think that your agent probably does as best the groundwork that he can for you during this time period to know what the market might look like and who might be interested. But that negotiating week, which I think makes such a difference in NHL free agency sometimes, Will, that, you know, if you want to call it the of course, I can't think of the word right now. Free agency week where you get to chat with the free agent. Negotiation tampering window.
I don't think they use tampering. I think it's just negotiation window.
You can call it what it is. Yeah. It's tampering. That's technically gone, right? So if you're Johnny's agent, you're trying your best to get a feel for what the market is, but you don't really know until July 13th hits and you're able to get those offers in. And, you know, I think that there's always a way of going around that. We've always wondered how on July 1st did they come to terms on a 7-year deal with all these bonus. Yeah, that's because they do a little bit of work behind the scenes, but we don't really know yet what that market looks like for Johnny outside of Calgary. We have a good idea of what the Flames could offer, and we think it's going to be competitive to what's out there, but that's another answer. It's another piece of the puzzle that we haven't gotten to yet. Who is out there that can offer that significant of money in an area that Johnny might be interested in going to? Still have to wait and see on that one.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And you know what? You know, text line points out that there's still, I think, a chance that, you know, Calgary can increase their offer as the deadline gets closer, and the longer Gaudreau waits, the more pressure that it puts on the Flames. I 100% agree with that, but it doesn't mean that he's going to sign a deal. It just feels like at this point that you're this close for the first time in your life, you might want to test free agency and at least see what's out there. More of your thoughts coming up on 960-960. Gaudreau is not the priority in my mind. Tkachuk is. Get number 19 locked up for 8 years. Get what you can for Johnny at the draft. Use the cap savings wisely. Well, you're not going to get anything for Johnny at the draft. I'll tell you that right now. He's an unrestricted free agent. So you might get a fifth round pick. I don't even think you're going to get that because, as we just talked about, there's a negotiation window that opens 2 days after that. I don't think you're getting anything for Johnny at the draft. So that's just a couple of texts at 960. There's also a comparison. Of course, people have brought this up a lot, Logan. You and I haven't talked about this necessarily a ton. But of course, if Johnny Gaudreau, for whatever reason, is not a member of the Flames next season, what can the Calgary Flames do to replace him? People asking what the age difference is between Philip Forsberg and Johnny Gaudreau. And the answer to that question is essentially nothing. 1 year, I believe, is the age difference between the two. So Johnny Gaudreau,
Forsberg's 27 until August.
They have the exact same birthday, believe it or not. August 13th, 1993 is Johnny Gaudreau. August 13th, 1994 is Philip Forsberg. So they're exactly 1 year apart. Predators GM David Poile gave an update today on Philip Forsberg's negotiations. As soon as I, you know, allow ourselves to hear it. Here's David Poile on Philip Forsberg.
You answered that. The negotiators are still talking a lot. We just don't have it done. It's we got a deadline coming up here, July 13th. So it's, you know, it's. I wish it was done. I've said that two months ago. So I don't have any new lines. It's disappointing. I'm sure they're disappointing because they feel that we should be, you know, maybe offering something different. We feel that we're in a good spot, and you know, we just got to keep working to get this done.
Got to keep working to get things done. It sounds like it could be in a very similar spot as Gaudreau and the Flames, although we haven't heard a lot on Gaudreau and the Flames in terms of what actual negotiations have looked like. Brad Treliving is very good at keeping things very close to his chest. But I can tell you that Frank Saravelli of Daily Faceoff says Philip Forsberg and the Preds are pretty far apart. So it doesn't sound like that's going to be a situation that is resolved or a bridge that's built the next week, but you never know.
It's an interesting name to watch for.
It would add to Team Sweden, would it not?
It certainly would. A year younger, you'd only be signing him to a 7-year deal. Not the same player as Gaudreau, but the same, you know, sort of play-driving winger to a similar extent, coming off the best year he's ever had at 42-42. I would have no reason to think the Flames wouldn't be interested in Philip Forsberg if Johnny Gaudreau was to walk to free agency. As a matter of fact, I would imagine he'd be close to the top of the list. Especially, and you know, we joke about the Sweden thing, but that might be a real thing. You never, you know.
Well, it would certainly help.
I can't imagine it hurts.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't think it hurts.
So yeah, I'd imagine it's a right shot. He's 27, so maybe that's a little bit more palatable for, you know, I guess 28 when the season starts. So maybe that's a little bit more palatable for some people to go. And I understand why people have navigated to that. Right, you have to, in the back of your mind, start to, you know, accept the process. And again, no one here is saying that Johnny's 100% gone. We don't know that. And until it's done, it's not done. But you have to keep an eye to the future and look and see, because there is every possibility that it is done. It could be, right? And what does it look like if you let that guy walk? Well, it's certainly a lot more palatable if you have somebody in a similar vein, like a Philip Forsberg, to plug in potentially in his spot. So
a couple of texts come in, say a sign and trade for Gaudreau. I mean, sure, that could happen. We don't see it happen very often in the NHL, so I'd be pretty surprised if it did. But yeah, you certainly can't count that out, Logan. I think that would be, it would be awesome for Brad Treliving in the Flames, because you risk losing a player for nothing, but this way you at least get something in return. But we just don't see it happen a lot in the NHL.
Well, no, and because teams are, and I understand why those texters are saying a sign and trade. You're trying to get
for Gaudreau, absolutely. Yeah.
But does that signing team that's trading for him want to give him all of that money and assets to acquire him when, if you potentially waited a week, he could walk to free agency. Again, the only difference in all of that is the eighth year.
Well, and that's just it. And you've talked about that. You don't feel the eighth year is important. So a sign and trade doesn't.
I don't think it's not important.
But so a sign and trade doesn't make as much sense then.
No. I think that if you're a team that's trying to squeeze as much into it as you can, sure. But I mean, if you're signing Johnny Gaudreau, you're probably in a win now sort of mentality. Are you willing to give up other assets to go along with Johnny Gaudreau so that you could get him to a sign and trade on an eighth year deal? Maybe. But again, you can just potentially wait a couple of weeks and negotiate with him freely and not give up anything on the free agent side of things. Right? That's always the back and forth on a sign and trade is, yes, there might be some advantages to it, but you also have to convince Brad Treliving to let you negotiate with one of his players to come to terms with that deal, then acquire him. And some GMs, especially in the NHL, just aren't willing to go through that headache, Will. They'd rather just sign him or try to sign him on July 13th.
And I mean, from a Flames standpoint, it would certainly be a nice gift that if Johnny Gaudreau does intend to sign elsewhere, it would be a nice parting gift to allow the Flames to trade him and get some assets in return. Nonetheless, going to be a fascinating situation to watch unfold over the next couple of weeks. Nothing imminent on that by any means. Certainly doesn't feel like that, and very much feels like a waiting game. The longer the wait goes on, though, the more and more you feel like the Calgary Flames are heading for a future without Johnny Gaudreau. Wait and see what happens in the coming days. 2 weeks from today is round one of the NHL draft in Montreal, and then just under 3 weeks away from NHL free agency. So time and the runway, they're running out. I mean, the runway is getting shorter and the time's running out. We'll see what happens with the Flames and Johnny Gaudreau, and certainly we'll be monitoring that over the next couple of weeks. He's Logan. I'm Will. Aaron's our producer. As always, thanks for listening today. If you missed any of the program, don't forget you can find The Big Show wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon. Subscribe now. Never miss a moment or a guest. We'll take a break, come back. Flames Talk with Pat and Matt is next. More on the Calgary Flames, I'm sure, and of course across the NHL. The main talking point from Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final. The Avalanche have a commanding 3-1 series lead, but is it covered in controversy? So the guys will dive into that and a whole lot more. Thanks for listening. Back again tomorrow. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.